Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. Happy St. Patty's Day to all of you who are listening. And we are going to have a bit of fun today. We are going to be talking with Wade Nichols about his delightful book, The Glamis Curse. I mean, after all, it's perfectly appropriate for this holiday today. Wherever you are, I hope you're having a wonderful time. And Wade, I want to welcome you to the show.
Well, thank you very much, and happy St. Patrick's Day to you.
Thank you, sir. This book, The Glamis Curse, was just absolutely delightful to read, and I want my audience to know a little bit about you. You graduated from Yale College and Columbia Law School, and you'd been in the Navy for a while, and then you decided you were going to go into a Midtown law firm, and you ended up in Manhattan, of all places. You got involved in global health care and beauty products, a company associated with SAME. And Central Park is very significant in the story in New York, which is a beautiful place. But you ended up in California. Whatever started you writing fiction?
Well, you see, I just could never make up my mind.
Gotcha.
Well, good question. When I was in Manhattan, which was for most of my professional career as a lawyer, Central Park was two blocks away from my office. And my kids during those years grew up, and when they came into the city, we'd often go to Central Park and then look at the squirrels. And you know, Central Park over that period of time went through a tremendous metamorphosis. Because of the Central Park Conservancy and all of its hard work, it was really brought back from a place that was in decay to a place that is really at the heart and lungs of New York City. And so I'm a huge supporter of the Central Park Conservancy and Central Park, and happily, it is the venue for the book, and the book actually explores some little-known aspects of the park, some imaginary, but most of them are factual.
Well, I really found that so interesting that for a lot of years with your children, you would often make up stories for them. And that's actually how the Glamis Curse started evolving. Because you were badgered by someone. Who was it that badgered you and said, you've got to write these stories down?
That would be my daughter. She actually wrote the foreword for the book, and that is true. But I'm sure lots of people with difficult jobs have the experience that it's very hard when you get home at night, even if the kids are still awake, to get into a dialogue with them. So we found that bedtime stories was a great way to do that, and I tried to make my stories a good platform for talking about what was happening in their lives and getting them in a position where they were happy to talk about their fears and misgivings and ups and downs. And that really was the genesis of this book, because many years later when I was taking my daughter around looking at colleges, she said, you know, I finally figured out as I got older that those stories weren't just for fun. You actually had a method to your madness. And I had to admit that I did. And she said, well, you know, before you're completely unable to remember any of them, why don't you write them down? So with enough badgering, I finally gave that a try. But as I started writing, I realized that probably a bunch of disconnected Aesop's fables were not the right thing for modern kids who are more sophisticated and looking for something beyond that. So I decided to try to write something that would appeal to younger readers in a fairly wide range, but be written like a grown-up novel so that it would sort of challenge them to expand their reading tastes and think about subjects that are more than simply adventure-based. So that was the genesis of the book, and I would have to admit that I worked on it and re-edited it and changed the plot line over a period of about 8 years.
Well, that's quite a length of time to invest in this. It's absolutely charming. It really, really is. And Roger Corman said that it's a heartwarming coming-of-age book that will certainly become an important preteen's film, like an animated Harry Potter or Toy Story or Finding Nemo with a deeper heart. What I thought was just so wonderful was the way that you did weave the characters together. And, of course, there's magic in it. You can't have something that is relating to Scotland and to all kinds of wonderful critters and characters and have them not come alive with the magic. And this Lucinda is such a fascinating character because right at the very beginning of the book, she's 16 years old. Now, was Lucinda based on your daughter, or was there another particular character reference that you utilized to bring Lucinda to life?
Well, I would say she's an amalgam of the wonderful people I've met in my life, but Lucinda's, as you know, the premise of the book goes back to the year 10,000 when Macbeth was beguiled by witches to kill King Duncan. And the premise of the book is for that dastardly deed, all of his descendants were cursed. And the premise then is that for 40 generations of his descendants, they were all horrible, villainous people who came to very sorry ends until in the 41st generation, Lucinda is born. And unaccountably, she is not that way at all. She's just the reverse. So it kind of takes off from there. She is, as it happens, the witches who were instrumental in bringing down Macbeth are immortal, so they are still around, and they've had their life's work be to make sure that all of the descendants had stayed cursed. So when Lucinda turns out not to be as expected, they get the assignment to either change her into an evil person or, if that doesn't work, snuff her out.
They're so nasty stinkers.
Well, you know, witches are that way.
Oh, yes, they are. And you've got some nice grouping of characters with that you just absolutely love to hate them. They're really fun. You just love to hate them.
Well, the witches have enough problems among themselves. You would think they weren't looking for other ones, but they do.
Oh, yes, and their marvelous dysfunctional characters, characterizations, are delightful. Like I said, these are the types of personalities you love to hate. Now, Lucinda is able to be assisted by a mentor, a Mr. Ferguson, who discovers where she is, and he's sort of like a guardian for her.
Well, Ferguson is actually, that's the first person she meets outside of the manor house after her father is mysteriously killed in an arson fire. She's packed off to the city to meet with Mr. Ferguson, who's actually the lawyer for the estate, and he gives her a piece of information and a piece of property. The information is that her villainous old father has gotten himself so deeply in debt to the tax service and to all of the surrounding landowners that there's not a penny left in the estate. But he does give her a ring that the father had lodged with her that is obviously very, very old, but at that point very, very dull. She takes that as being really the only thing left to be passed down to her from her father. And then the other information that she receives is that a guardian has been appointed who will meet her for tea that day. And that is a very magical person indeed, as it turns out. That is Sir Edgar.
Yes, and Sir Edgar is quite fascinating person, and he has got a boss who's a warlock.
Yes. Well,
I love the way that this business goes. I mean, this is so cool. And when you're going through this, and I think adults, especially if they were to have like a reading group with young kids, I think they'd enjoy this just as much as the kids would.
Well, that was the hope. I was kind of hoping this would encourage parents or older brothers and sisters to sit with younger readers at bedtime or some other time and kind of read together the way people used to do out on the frontier, I suppose, or maybe before television and gaming and all those things were so available. That really was kind of the idea, that there are things in the book that will appeal to an adult reader and things that will appeal to a younger reader, and together they can kind of get everything that's in the book to be gotten.
Now, they end up leaving Scotland because she had been so isolated because of her diabolical father that this, when he died, it really freed her. And, of course, she's at that magical age of 16, which is called the coming out period. And she is coming out. She's coming alive. And because of Sir Edgar, she's going to be going to the New World, which represents the United States. Now, I really like the names that you have here for the three witches. You have Griselda, Nefaria, and who was the third one?
Brunella.
Brunella, yes. They sound sort of like old teas that somebody doesn't know what to do with. And then you've got Queen Hecate. Boy, does she have a personality problem.
Well, she does, and she was actually one of the characters in Shakespeare's Macbeth. And if anything, she had a worse personality problem then than she does now. She's the queen of all witches, and she essentially stands for absolute evil.
Poor witches, they really need to have an attitude adjustment because they just don't get it.
The thing that I kind of loved about the witches is the witches have a pecking order of their own, which makes their life kind of interesting, too.
Mm-hmm. Now, you chose an animal characterization that I really have a fondness for, because here in the Pacific Northwest, we have all of these delightful squirrels, and they are so entertaining. And, of course, there is a special squirrel language in this book that is just a lot of fun. But Lucinda can talk squirrel. Sounds a little squirrely to me, but it works.
Well, that is one of the gifts that she receives when she meets her warlock knight protector, who, by the way, does not tell her that he's a warlock. He simply says that he's been appointed by a warlock to protect her.
Mm-hmm.
And tries to explain to her the danger she's in from the witches, but she, of course, is too smart to listen to her elders. So she thinks that she's fleeing to the New World to get away from enemies of her father. Little does she know, and as much as Sir Edgar tries to convince her, she doesn't buy it till closer to the end. But because he's in fact a warlock, and because in being appointed, he's received certain magical powers, one of them is to grant a wish that she'd always had. As you were saying, she spent most of her 16 years locked up in a little garret over a carriage house, and the only living creatures she's seen other than the housekeeper were a red squirrel family in the tree outside her window. And so she's spent most of her life fantasizing that she could actually become friends with them. And when she is granted certain magical powers, one of them is the power to talk to squirrels, which her guardian Sir Edgar also has. And that turns out to be the key to their ultimate deliverance.
Well, what I like is the fact that the squirrels, you have a whole family here of squirrels. And, of course, father is the elder of his squirrel household. and they all have specific personalities. But I never knew squirrels like steel cuts, cut oats. And let me tell you something. After I read your book, I went and put oats out, and the squirrels love it. They actually eat oats. I didn't believe it. I said, I'm going to test this out. And I did. I tested it out, and those little hummers came down the tree, and they're just munching away, and they are just loving the oats. I thought, ah, oh, son of a gun, it really works. They like steel-cut oats. Now, how did you learn that fact?
Well, I love steel-cut oats, and I didn't do the experiment that you did, but I'm glad to hear that it worked.
Well, it's absolutely wonderful. Now, the witches have been given the assignment. They have to go after Lucinda because they have got to get rid of this sweet, loving, wonderful, harmonious, happy, benevolent personality because she really has got to be taken out of the picture. And they're so dysfunctional, it's almost comical at times. I mean, they really are dysfunctional. And Queen Hecate, she's a mess. So the four of them really perform some interesting scenarios in this book. And, of course, Mama Squirrel, who's just called Mother in the book, Mama Squirrel is very, very caring, very authoritative. And Father ends up disappearing, and there's a whole story about that that goes through here. And the younger squirrels end up having all kinds of adventures. But in your book, that's the reason I tried to steel-cut oats to the squirrels. Sir Edgar ends up giving the squirrels the steel-cut oats because there are poison acorns all over the place, which isn't very nice for the witches to do.
No, not at all nice. But then that they're not supposed to be nice. They're kind of typecast.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have a number of animal characters, which kids always love, and adults do, too. And when I think of the various people I've interviewed through the years that really have a belief in animal totems, was there a reason why you chose the feared hunter? You have all kinds of interesting birds that you give, or different creatures that you give different titles to. Was there a reason why you chose certain ones?
Well, I would say that there was. Partly, the book is about overcoming stereotypes and prejudices. And in the beginning of the book, the great horned owl is the creature presented by the mother to the young squirrels as being the one thing that has to be avoided at all costs, because, in fact, they do eat squirrels in
mm-hmm.
life. But as it turns out later in the book, warlocks and witches all have spirit creatures into which they can convert. And one of the witches converts into a tower raven, which is a huge, huge black raven that eats meat. And it turns out that Sir Edgar, the warlock knight protector for Lucinda, his spirit creature is actually a great horned owl. But unfortunately, it happens to be an owl whose eyesight is a little off. So he needs the assistance of the squirrels to become a true reconnaissance agent.
Well, I really enjoyed the scenario in the shop, in the restaurant, when the little squirrels, when they're trying to get things put into order, they end up, one of them, Judy, I think it was, the little girl squirrel, she ends up being in the porridge pot, and the poor people in the restaurant swear they're going to end up getting closed down if the health inspector ever finds out that a squirrel has been in somebody's porridge. I mean, it's really cute. There's a lot of good stuff in here. What experience did you have that made you think of that one?
Well, as I told you, I worked on this over protracted period of time, and I just kind of found that once the characters were developed, they almost found their own mischief. I mean, she wound up in this restaurant in Central Park at the zoo because she remembered how good the oatmeal smelled when her father brought it home as a gift from Sir Edgar. And so she thought, oh boy, and now I know where I can get it again. And she goes in because she smells the oatmeal bubbling on the pot and gets trapped in there. And the lady who's running the restaurant, of course, is deathly afraid that anyone will see a rodent in there and close her down. So she tries to whack Judy with a ladle or catch her in a jar or do almost anything just to get her out of sight, and of course is unsuccessful in that. And then Lucinda wanders in and saves Judy from that fate.
And then there is this nasty, stinky person that's got a place where he hides squirrels, and he's hooked up with the witches somehow. What's his name?
Well, the witches call him a troll. Now, like a lot of the sort of evil, nefarious characters, you could imagine that maybe they're just horrible people, or you could imagine that they're actually trolls and supernatural things. Everybody concludes that he's so horrid, trapping animals and pinning their felts up on the wall and such, that he must be a troll. And Sir Edgar concludes that because he lives under a bridge. So I'm certainly willing to accept that he's a troll.
Mm-hmm. And trolls, I know at Renaissance fairs, they are primary characters that are always around the bridges. And one of the things they'll do is come out and scare people. It's really a lot of fun. I've done Renaissance fairs for years. And I'll never forget one guy that did it. He was short guy. He was like 5 feet, maybe a little bit less in height. So when he made himself up as a troll, and he had this humongous hammer, and it was unreal. You'd see children's eyes just getting as big as saucers, looking at him and just going, oh, because he was not that much bigger than they were, and he had this massive hammer. So it just, he just played the part to the hilt, and trolls have just got all kinds of stories about him. And anybody that's interested in fantasy, check out trolls, who they are, what they are, and they've been written about in so many stories. So he just fits into this, especially in Central Park. I mean, let's get real. In New York, you see everything.
You see everything, and you see everything in the park. That's one reason it's such a fascinating venue.
Yes, it is. And someone could look like a troll, and they'd appear to be, well, okay, he's in his play somewhere. You know, you would never, never pay any attention to him. He would just look normal. It's like, okay.
Well,
white hair, purple eyebrows, it's all right. That looks normal in New York. We don't worry about that. I mean, you've got so many wonderful things in your book. And, of course, people would need to get the book to read it to find out about all of the wonderful adventures. And I think having a reading group with this would be just marvelous, because each kid could take a chapter and read it out loud. I think it's a wonderful book to encourage the development of good reading skills. And as I observe this, I am just so impressed with the flow of the story. Now, it sounds to me, by the way the story ends, because, well, I can't give away what goes on here. I mean, you've got a weasel in here. You've got all kinds of wonderful characters. However, the story is going to be continued. Are you planning a sequel to The Glamis Curse?
Well, it's entirely possible. All of the heroes in the book survive to the end, and although two of the witches do not, the status of the third, whose alter ego is the Black Tower Raven, is very much in doubt. There is a large bird that flies off toward England at the end of the book, so who knows what that means.
That's right, but I thought this means there's going to be a sequel here. For those that are listening that might be interested in writing, and they go, oh, I just would love to do something like this. When you were trying to put this book together for young adults, and adults to enjoy, what was your biggest challenge with it?
Well, getting it right. As I said, it took years, not of constant work, but off and on work, and I found that when I would put the book down for a period of time and then pick it up again, I would see, oh, that's obviously a mistake, or that's too young, or that's too mature, or that's too boring, or that's too whatever. So just picking it up and reading it with a fresh eye, I think, was important. And as I said, if you get into your characters in a way, they take on a life of their own. So it really became a fun process. It's frustrating and arduous, but it was fun. And finally, I just had to make myself stop because I knew I'd keep going on revisions forever if I didn't.
Oh, yes. I think that's something we're all guilty of, those of us that love to write. I like one of the comments that you have, and this is towards the end of the book, when the adventures are pretty much over, where the witches have had to retire, and a couple of them disappearing permanently. But it's Sir Edgar. He says, "There's no shame in knowing fear. It's been my comrade many times, but there is shame in letting fear quell action when action is required." This is a powerful grouping of words. And I think the way that you weave your story and you put points of what I feel is positive motivation, inspiration, and thoughtful response to certain conditions to go on, the challenges to both Lucinda, Sir Edgar, the squirrels, and all the other little critters that are involved, it really is important. And when you're a teenager, my goodness, you're afraid of everything. You don't feel like you fit in. You feel like you're totally a weirdo and nothing is ever going to be normal in your life. That's just teenage years, typically. I don't think I've ever met a teenager that didn't feel that way.
Well, I'm sure you're right. And in the case of the Red Squirrel family, they have the obvious problem of being the only red squirrels in a world that's populated at Central Park by gray squirrels. So they they are all picked on and bullied and chased off. And so, yes, it's difficult. I mean, certainly my recollection is that growing up is hard to do, and I'm sure that that teens would all agree with that.
Well, I think it is a fabulous book. And I agree with what we discussed in the beginning. It's a wonderful book to read out loud for young people. It is just marvelous because they have an involvement that with the story itself that's very captivating. What is your website that people can go to find out more about The Glamis Curse?
Well, thank you for that question. The website is NicholsBook, NicholsBook.com. And it has the first chapter, which you can read for free, and lots of information about the park and about a little bit of information even about squirrels, which turns out are scarce even in their native Scotland.
Amazing. Are there really any red squirrels here?
Yes. When I lived in Rye, New York, I actually trapped one in the attic in a live trap. And I called the ASPCA to see what I should do, and they said, drive it at least an hour north and deposit it in the woods where it will be safe. So they do exist, but they're very rare.
Well, I know the falcons. I think you have a family of falcons in a building way, way up in New York. So there are the wild creatures that like those little squirrels for a lunch. Or breakfast or dinner or whatever it is, and they're out there hunting. I mean, New York people think of high-rise buildings. Well, that's true. You've got a lot of those there. But there is so much nature that is in Central Park. It is a fascinating park when you go there, and they have the horses and buggies that you can get a ride in and go around the park. It's just absolutely delightful. Wade, you've done a wonderful job. It's been fun having you on the air today. This is a delightful book. I just think it fit in so beautifully with St. Paddy's Day. And just the stories of legends and fables and whatever magical stories that you want to include. It just is part of that part of the world, and it's delightful, and it's a part of our world. And I'm so glad that you wrote it.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Wade, it was a delight. This is Donna Sebo. Check out his book. If you have young people in your family, they can read the first chapter for free. They go to nicholsbook.com. That's NICHOLSBOOK.com. And you'll find out more about this delightful publication that just is magical, with imagination of characters and storylines that are totally enjoyable. Again, Wade, thank you so much for being my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. More good things to share. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hello and welcome back. I know we've got a caller on the line, and I want to let you know that if you'd like to talk with me directly, the telephone number to call in to is 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. And quickly, I want to remind those of you in the state of Washington that I am going to be appearing at the Emerald Spiral Expo at the Kent Commons on March 26. Now, of course, that's in Kent, Washington, and you can go to the emeraldspiral.com website and find out more details and information about that. So just know that, check that out. You'll get all of the fine details that you need. And I am going to be going to New York next month. For those of you that are listening on the East Coast, I will be in New York City. I will be there from the 14th through the 17th, I believe it is. And I will be available for private appointments by phone or in person while I am in New York City. Let's go to our first caller for the day. Welcome to the show, first name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Hi, Donna. It's Amy, and I'm calling from Maine.
Where in Maine?
I'm in the western part of the state, western mountains of Maine.
Oh, it must be just beautiful there now that spring's here.
Well, it is. We've got a lot of snow to go, but March is kind of a roller coaster ride.
Wow. Well, do you know what? Here in the Pacific Northwest, I went out to walk my little Scotty Victor. I was astonished. Our temperatures have warmed up, and all of the cherry blossom trees are in bloom. I couldn't get over it. It's like in 24 hours, they have just burst out in color. We have rhodies that are starting to bloom. Crocus are coming up all over the place. Now, they had come up a little bit earlier, but I'm just mean it's an abundance of them. And I'm just absolutely amazed. Camellias are blooming, and it's like somebody said, hey, let's do it now because Mother Nature is feeling good. So it's incredible. Absolutely gorgeous. And I go,
It is. You're probably 3 to 4 weeks ahead of us. We're a lot of snow. One day it's 50, the next day it's 20. Snow, rain, sleet, hail. We're a long ways from there.
Wow, it sounds like what we had just about 2 or 3 weeks ago. It's amazing. It's been an incredible year so far with weather and weird things happening. But sometimes, you know, it drops down into freezing. So some things you can't even go out and plant that you might want to plant this time of the year just because you're not sure that the freezes are over with. Well, let's get down to business with you. The first thing I'm looking at, Amy, is 1, be patient. 2, be prepared because the change or changes, I should say, that you really want, I give you 2 to 3 weeks and you're going to see a lot of things happening. There's also a sense of laying something to rest. There is an issue that you have been dealing with for quite a long time and you're finally realizing you're finished with it. It is a thoughtful awareness that you have. And as you look at this, you're going to say to yourself, I wish it hadn't taken me so long, but it's okay. I'll deal with what I have to deal with. I finally have got this, whatever the situation is representing, I can lay it to rest. And I'm seeing like an old-fashioned cemetery headstone, and you're there and saying, rest in peace, because I'm leaving you behind. I'm seeing you turn and walking away. So I think this is a year where fast-paced change is going to be very significant in your life. I think you're going to find yourself really amazed after you finish this year at how much you are clearing out that you don't want anymore, how much you are going to be extremely decisive about. The clarity in your thinking is marvelous. And you are going to be, as far as I'm concerned, on a roll of action that's going to be through this year and also through next year. So it's okay. Take care of the little things that you need to take care of. The big things are going to come into place where you can do exactly what you need to do with them, whether it's finances, whether it is a certain action, a certain plan, putting things together, whatever it is, it's going to happen. What would you like to ask me?
Oh, thank you. I put my house property on the market in October of last year, listed with a real estate agent. And I would really love to get rid of it as soon as possible. That's the question. Do you see this happening?
Not immediately, no. I'm getting the number 6. So I don't know if it's going to be 6 weeks or 6 months. Know this. If you've done everything to prepare the property so that it is just spick and span to the best of your capability, know that when a choice is made by someone, it's going to be done very, very fast. So it's important for you to have everything in order because when that person decides that what you have is what they want, it's like you're going to have to move really fast. So just be prepared.
That sounds wonderful, Donna. I feel it's all ready to go, and I'm ready to go.
Where are you going to go?
Well, Donna, I was in Alaska for many, many years, and I'm not quite sure, and I also fell in love with some country in another, some land in another country.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not quite sure, but I know I'm very ready to leave here because this had played a role for a little while. I had to come back due to a death in the family.
Well, and all I want you to do is just know that once you get past the season that you've had, once you get past that, you need to know that when that person decides they want to buy, it's going to move very quickly. So just have the attitude of preparation. If you need to get boxes packed, have boxes packed. If you need to have a garage sale, have a garage sale. do whatever you need to do so that you're just ready.
Oh, that's terrific. So number six, lucky number six.
I don't know if it's 6 weeks, 6 months. I know it's not 6 years, but or the
thank
you know,
goodness.
The, no, you're not going to be there. Actually, I honestly don't have an exact date for you, because there's some external situations here that are going on, and you have no control over them. Just like the weather, you have no control over that. So you just need to know that you start packing things up, getting rid of what you don't want. Take care of the small stuff. Get it all in order.
Well, thank you very, very much, Donna, and great to hear your voice again.
Well, it's a delight. Have a wonderful, wonderful evening in Maine.
Thank you. You too out there.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Donna Sebo, and if you'd like to give me a buzz, you can by calling 888-815-9756, and that's how simple it is. Just give me your first name or initial, and we'll be chatting. Now, before I go to the next caller, I want to let you know tomorrow we have a wonderful cardiologist, Dr. Lindell, and he is going to be talking about the cure for heart disease. Now, this is not a gimmick, ladies and gentlemen. This man, as a cardiologist, has seen a lot. You're going to want to listen, because I don't know of anyone that has not had someone that they love or a friend that has been affected by heart disease. So let's find out how we can do something about it in a healthy way. So I hope you'll tune in tomorrow. Dr. Lindell is going to be my guest. Let's go to our next caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Michael from Carmel. I've called you once before.
Hi, Markle. I'm combining car. You know, gee whiz, my mouth is working well. That's what happens when you talk about a Glamis curse. La, la, la. Okay, I'm just funning you. Okay, Michael, there is just so much that is going on. You feel like you have to stay detached, because I'm looking at a merry-go-round, just going a mile a minute, a merry-go-round. And you're going, well, I wonder if it could go any faster, because I can't get on anything. The machine's going too fast. And I want to say you have to bide your time. But you need to be prepared that there is going to come a moment when that merry-go-round is going to stop. You're going to be able to jump on one of the carousel horses, and then you're going to be able to see things moving. But it will be fairly constrictive. You're not going to have as much flexibility as you would like to have, and there is an economic situation that you're going to have to be very, very careful about so that you don't feel like you're in a financial hole. But something's happening. There is a pivotal point of shift that you have to be alert for. And what I'm getting is that it's between July and October. There's a number of social interactions with different people that I am seeing having a tremendous impact on some of your goals that you are wanting to achieve. But again, there's needing to be this awareness. Don't let somebody pick your financial pocket. Don't let them pick your pocket. You will not be a happy camper.
Huh. Okay.
What's your question for me today?
Well, I'm actually working on a couple, three projects. Maybe that's the merry-go-round, little inventions.
Mm-hmm.
A safe ride home program for kids if they've been drinking, which is going well. A couple of inventions I've thought of, but I'm still at a job where I've been doing for a year. I haven't sold anything, but I'm continuing, and I'm going to a big convention next week. I'm still pursuing it, and I'm wondering, should I stick with it, or is it going to go bye-bye?
No, I think it's worth going to the convention. I think you need to realize that you're getting these concepts and ideas because there is a place for them. And actually, there are a couple of concepts that you have. I don't know what they are, that they are not being shown to me. But a couple of these concepts combined would actually make a very good product. So apparently there is this rearranging of concepts, let me use that word, so that they become something that is adaptable to a different, using computer language, format.
Okay.
So I think I wouldn't encourage you at all to not do what you're doing. I think you're doing the right thing. Just be aware. Don't let anybody get into your financial pocket. You will not be a happy camper.
Meaning don't sell myself short is what you're saying.
Not only that, but don't give people money that they may say they can promise you the moon. Forget that. Check out your facts first.
Okay. I understand now. Okay. I really appreciate it. Thank you very,
very
kindly.
Oh, you're very welcome, Michael. Thank you so much for
calling
in.
When I get the concept more, I'm going to send you an email and show you what I'm working on.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Thank you, Michael.
A thing to bring home kids safe.
Oh, that is fabulous. That sounds great. Well, Michael, I wish you the best.
This
is Donna Sebo. You're more than welcome. We're taking a break for just a moment. We'll come back. I've got a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and maybe some more of something else. So join me. We'll be right back.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author Donna Sebo will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. I want to thank those of you that are sending me various stories and points of information. I've gotten the most wonderful videos on various people and conditions and situations, and I just love receiving it from you. Thank you very much. A couple of them are going to be in my newsletter. In fact, I got such a nice response from the newsletter that I sent out last month with the different videos that I passed along, the links to same. I'm going to be doing that. Whatever I get that I feel you might enjoy, then that's going to be included in the newsletter. It can be relating to health. It can be relating to any number of things. But it's just been wonderful. Thank you very, very much for sending it to me. And one of the stories that was sent to me, and I have heard this story before, but it's worth repeating, especially with it being St. Paddy's Day. And I know it's for the Irish, but we're going to throw the Scottish in because we had the Klamath curse today. Well, this is about a farmer. His name was Fleming. Maybe you've heard this story as well. One day, while he was trying to make a living for his family, he heard a cry for help coming from a nearby bog. Well, the first thing you do, it can be very, very dangerous in a bog. So he had his tools in hand. He dropped them. He runs over to the bog, and he jumps in because there was a little boy that was in this bog that was just terrified because he was being sucked down, and he was screaming at the top of his lungs and fighting, trying to get out. Well, Farmer Fleming saved this boy from what could have been a very, very bad situation. In fact, it could have caused his death. Well, There was, the next day, a fancy carriage that pulled up to this Scotsman's farm. And there was a very fine nobleman that stepped out and introduced himself as the father of the boy that Farmer Fleming had saved. And this was a nobleman, and he said to Farmer Fleming, "I want to repay you. You saved my son's life." Well, the Scottish farmer had a very strong sense of ethics, and he said, "I can't pay, accept payment for what I did. I would have done it for anyone. It's just what you do. If someone's in trouble, you help them." And so he just ignored what the nobleman wanted to do. And then the farmer's son, hearing all of the conversation, came around to the door of the family home, and the nobleman sees him and asks, "Is this your son?" And the farmer said, "Yes, he is." And so the nobleman said, "I'm going to make you a deal. I want you to let me provide your son with the level of education my own son is going to have. And if your son is anything like you, you'll no doubt grow to be a man that we're both going to be very proud of." Well, the farmer was stunned. "Could you turn down something like that?" "I don't think so." Of course, he accepted. So Farmer Fleming's son went to the finest of schools and eventually graduated from St. Mary's Hospital Medical School in London, and he went on to become known throughout the world as the noted Sir Alexander Fleming, who was the discoverer of penicillin. And it was years later, the same nobleman's son who was saved from the bog, who, well, he got very sick. In fact, he was deathly ill with pneumonia. What saved his life? Well, Sir Alexander Fleming's invention, penicillin. The name of the nobleman was Lord Randolph Churchill. Yes, that's right. His son's name, Sir Winston Churchill. Isn't it amazing how something goes around and comes around? I think it's a fabulous story. Well, it sounds like we've got a caller. Hello, welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Michelle. And I'm calling from Telluride, Colorado.
Where in Colorado?
Telluride. It's a small mountain town.
Wow. I don't think I've ever heard of that.
Oh, it's on the western part, western and southern part of the state.
Colorado is just magnificent.
It's
just
very beautiful. Gorgeous. You should make an effort to come down.
Oh, I'd love to. If I had a speaking opportunity, I'd be there in a flash. I just love Colorado.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Well, let's get down to business with you, hon, because I know we don't have a lot of time. Michelle, you're an extremely intelligent person. You've got a good business head on your shoulders. You also are very creative. Now, when I am watching you in my mind, I am looking at you feeling like you're stuck. And it's as if you've got a number of choices, and I'm looking at a lot of your hands spread out, your fingers spread out with an open palm down, and it's like there's extensions going out from your fingers, and you're saying, "There's so much I would like to do, I can't make up my mind."
Okay.
And
Go ahead.
Okay. Yes, I'm hearing you gurgling there. There's so much that you are capable of doing that you're sort of at a standstill right now because you're having to make some decision about where you want to put your focus. And I think that that is valid. And I think it is good for you to sort of stand back, stand down, so that you can gain the clarity that you need and try to put things into priority. You have got a very good mind. You are so capable of doing so many different things. You really have to be able to narrow your focus down. Let's say instead of having 10 options, narrow them down to 3. And then that way you can keep your focus the way that you would like to. I think it's marvelous. I really think you have got a breakthrough year here in 2011. It's going to be frustrating to you at times because you're not going to have everything put together the way you want it, as quickly as you want it. But that's all right. Be patient with yourself because you really are going to be making some breakthroughs, especially before August the 8th of this year. What would you like to ask me today?
A few things.
We're going to have to make it quick.
Mainly, can you hear me okay?
Yes. Michelle, can you hear me, hon? We are almost out of time. Can I ask
okay,
you to do
I'll just
something?
Ask you really about our financial security.
Okay. I'm going to ask you to do me a favor because the clock is ticking. We're almost at the end. And if you will, could you call me back tomorrow with your question?
Yeah, I might be able to.
Okay. Try to call me earlier in the half hour because I'm out of time.
Okay. Thank you so
much. I won't be able to answer you. You're very welcome, hon. I'm sorry for those of you listening. Wherever you are, have a fabulous St. Paddy's Day. May there always be work for your hands to do. May your purse always hold a coin or two, and may the sun always shine on your window pane. May a rainbow be certain to follow each rain. May the hand of a friend always be near you. May God fill your heart with gladness to cheer you. And may you be in heaven a half an hour before the devil knows you're dead. That's an Irish blessing. This is Donna Sebo. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. God bless. We'll talk with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.